And they'll tell me what I need to know, not what I want to know, what I need to know.
The U.S. President-elect chooses his cabinet. This is Wednesday, November 25th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, like his predecessor, the next U.S. president is likely to bypass Congress. Major concerns as the U.S. awaits its Thanksgiving holiday. The U.N. Secretary General calls for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire in Afghanistan. Taiwan is building its own submarine. That and more on today's VOA Asia. President-elect Joe Biden has introduced his selections for his national security team. It is his first substantive offering of how he'll shift from President Trump's America First policies by relying on a slate of foreign policy and national security experts from the Democratic establishment to serve as some of his most important advisors. Joining us is VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swera. What happened today as far as the president-elect's cabinet is concerned, Patsy?
Well, we certainly see a lot of messaging from the Biden campaign with his picks, right? I mean, number one, I think one of the biggest message is exactly what the president-elect said.
It's a team that reflects the fact that America is back, ready to lead the world, not retreat from it, once again sit at the head of the table, ready to confront our adversaries, and not reject our allies, ready to stand up for our values.
So that's a really big key takeaway from the cabinet picks, is the fact that, you know, the U.S. wants to return to a more prominent role on the global stage, and the picks for these top diplomatic and national security role really do reflect that desire from the Biden and Harris team. The other thing that I want to highlight is the fact that this is a very diverse pick of people. This is the first woman to oversee the Treasury Department. If she is confirmed, Janet Yellen, of course, she was the first woman to chair the U.S. Federal Reserve. And then there's also Avril Haines. She was previously deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the first woman to hold that position. And if confirmed, she will become the first woman to be the director of national intelligence. And, of course, we have Alejandro Mayorkas, Biden's pick for Secretary of Homeland Security, also the first Latino and immigrant to run the department, if confirmed, as well as Jake Sullivan, who's only 43 years old, who will be the youngest national security advisor, if confirmed. So definitely a lot of diversity in his picks.
How do you think this sets up a stage for changes in the international relations?
I think the choice of Anthony Blinken, who we know of someone who is very supportive of multilateralism, you know, a defender of alliances. So what he will do, I think, particularly for the Asia-Pacific region, is he will try to rebuild an alliances of partners into this era of competition with China, right? So that's definitely going to be part of his portfolio. And the other thing that I want to notice as well is bringing in former Secretary of State John Kerry as Joe Biden's special presidential envoy on climate and giving that position a seat on the National Security Council. That's also a big sign that this Biden administration will take climate change very seriously. That's a huge departure from the Trump administration, who has essentially called global warming a hoax and has pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord. So again, from the pick of John Kerry as well as Anthony Blinken, and the other picks from Homeland Security all the way to National Security Advisor and UN Ambassador picks, it signals an America that is ready to engage with the world on a multilateral approach, dealing with huge issues such as climate change as well as COVID-19.
Patsy Whitaker-Swera is the VOA White House correspondent. Patsy, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
U.S. presidents often change government policy through presidential actions, issuing executive orders, proclamations, or memoranda, bypassing Congress and the legislative process. Michael Sullivan reports President Donald Trump has relied heavily on this tactic, and President-elect Joe Biden has promised to do the same.
Through an executive order in January 2017, Trump temporarily restricted immigration from majority Muslim countries that he said were hotbeds of terrorism. The move was widely criticized and quickly blocked in the courts, setting up legal battles. A less sweeping immigration ban was later upheld, but is likely to be reversed by Joe Biden, who will be sworn in as president January 20th. John Woolley co-directs the American Presidency Project at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
Because almost any order can be reversed by a subsequent order, we can be very confident that Joe Biden is going to come in with his guns blazing in terms of executive orders.
The first president, George Washington, issued the first of what were called executive orders, giving instructions to government departments. Abraham Lincoln later freed slaves in the Emancipation Proclamation, which consisted of two separate executive orders during the Civil War. Franklin Roosevelt signed more than 3,700 executive orders, the most of any president. The power to take unilateral actions is not spelled out in the Constitution, which simply says the president is in charge of the executive branch of government, says Kenneth Mayer of the University of Wisconsin.
They emerged because they are a natural application of the broad grant of executive power that's in the Constitution.
One of Franklin Roosevelt's orders, later widely criticized, confined Japanese Americans in camps during the Second World War. Trump has also used executive actions to implement controversial policy changes, withdrawing from the Paris Agreement a climate accord, for example, bypassing Congress. Kim Whaley teaches law at the University of Baltimore.
Separation of powers, constitutional questions are now, you know, being ripped from the headlines every day.
In Trump's first year in office, he issued 55 executive orders, including one that authorized wall construction on the southern border. Sometimes the branches of government have worked together. The Supreme Court, through a landmark ruling, and President Dwight Eisenhower, through executive action, integrated schools in the 1950s. But sometimes presidents act on their own, inviting conflict with other branches of government. Harry Truman nationalized steel mills during the Korean War, says Kim Whaley.
That was really attempting to take over private industry for purposes of serving the war effort. The court said that's not okay. Of course, it was a completely different court.
Trump is using his last 2 months in office to leave his mark on government through other powers of the presidency, installing loyalists in key jobs and issuing government regulations. John Woolley.
One of the things we're going to see from the Trump administration is a furious production of regulations over the course of the next 2 months to try to nail down things that will be hard for they would just cause delay.
Slowing, but not stopping, Biden's efforts to change course. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. There are concerns in the United States this week as the country celebrates its Thanksgiving holiday. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has urged people not to travel and hold large family gatherings amid a surge in COVID-19 infections across the country. More than 59 million people around the world have been infected with the coronavirus, according to Johns Hopkins University statistics. The United States continues to lead the world in infections with more than 12.4 million cases, followed by India with more than 9.1 infections and Brazil with 6 million. The virus has killed about 1.4 million people, more than 257,000 of those deaths in the United States. South Korea's delivery workers have fallen into what they call a legal blind spot and say it's a deadly place to be as the novel coronavirus drives an unprecedented boom in online business. Megan Rebell reports.
The pandemic has driven an unprecedented boom in online business in South Korea. But that has come at a sobering cost. 15 delivery workers have died so far this year. Their families blame health failure caused by extreme overwork. Jong San-rok works 14 hours a day without a lunch break to deliver hundreds of boxes.
"15 people already dead, which is very ironic because we're not working to die, but to live."
Many delivery workers are denied safeguards and basic benefits, such as minimum wage, overtime or insurance. Most are classified as self-employed, hired under what some refer to as gap-jill contracts. It's a legal blind spot that affects around 8% of South Korea's workforce, says Kim Tae-wan, the leader of a union of 5,000 couriers.
"There are many gap-jill contracts. While general workers are guaranteed by employment contract, delivery workers cannot be protected because we are treated as self-employed. That leaves us exposed to abuse of power."
Labour officials say cutthroat competition adds pressure to cut delivery fees, which averages 72 cents per package. Activists compiled accounts of those whose deaths have been attributed to the system. Some developed breathing problems and chest pains, leading to heart failure or, in at least one case, suicide. Public outcry prompted apologies from big firms, an acknowledgement from South Korea's labour minister. But many hold out little hope of change at a time of record unemployment. Meanwhile, logistics firms are cashing in. Hanjin Transportation, Sangrok's company, posted a 35% increase in first half-year operating profit.
Reuters' Megan Revelle reporting. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Officials in Afghanistan say two back-to-back bombs went off Tuesday in central Bamiyan province, killing at least 14 people and injuring 50 others. The deadly violence in the predominantly minority Shiite Hazara region is the first such attack since the United States and its allies invaded Afghanistan 19 years ago and ousted the Taliban from power. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is calling for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire in Afghanistan to boost U.S.-mediated Afghan-Taliban peace negotiations going on in Doha, Qatar. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen Tuesday vowed to defend the Democratic Island's sovereignty with the construction of a new fleet of domestically developed submarines, a key project supported by the United States to counter neighboring China. Olivia Chan has more.
Taiwan marked the start of construction of a new fleet of domestically developed submarines in the southern city of Kaohsiung on Tuesday. At the ceremony, President Tsai Ing-wen vowed to defend the Democratic Island's sovereignty and called the move a, quote, historic milestone for Taiwan's defensive capabilities.
"Today's construction of a national submarine, they demonstrate the power and independence of national defense, which is strengthening day by day."
The event was attended by the de facto U.S. ambassador to Taiwan, Brent Christensen, as this is a key project supported by the United States. The U.S. government in 2018 gave the green light for U.S. manufacturers to participate in the program, a move widely seen as helping Taiwan secure major components, though it is unclear which U.S. companies are involved. State-backed CSBC Corporation Taiwan said it would deliver the first of eight planned submarines in 2025, giving a major boost to Tsai's military modernization and self-sufficiency plan. China, which claims Taiwan as its own territory, has ramped up its military activities nearby. The Chinese forces have, on occasion, flown fighter jets across the unofficial buffer median line of the sensitive Taiwan Strait.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please enjoy the day ahead. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. please enjoy the day ahead.